Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Mark and will be continuing this series with part two of Wisdom and Warnings of Jesus. So let's turn in our Bibles to Mark chapter 12, verse 38, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Beware the scribes who desire or go around in long flowing robes and love the greetings in the marketplace and the best seats in the synagogues and all these things. But they're hypocrites, they're phonies. They devour widows' houses, and for a pretense they make long prayers. These will receive the greater condemnation. And now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. And at that time, like Jesus said, they would, in some cases, they would literally blow a trumpet. You know, gather around. And, you know, we see people doing this sometimes today. You see some of the crazy things that they do on so-called Christian television, you know, and it's, you know, they've got so-and-so's going to give $1,000, you know, and they blow in a trumpet and ring the bell and, you know, and all the attention's focused on that person. That's what was happening back here. Everybody was like, oh, that's great. Did you see how much that guy gave? But then there was one poor widow who came and threw in two mites, which make a quadrant. This is less than a penny. And Jesus called his disciples over and said, assuredly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given into the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. Wow, what a lesson. You know, God is just, he's just not like us. He's not impressed with big offerings. And especially those big offerings that really don't cost anybody anything. It's like, hey, you know, it's just a tax deduction, and I need a good write-off here, so I'll throw a bunch of money the church's way. And then, hey, God, did you see that I gave you? You know, it's pretty substantial, wasn't it? Well, actually, no. The lady that gave a dollar made a greater contribution than you did. God sees things completely different than we do. Now, chapter 13 is a chapter that I think we're somewhat familiar with, because it's a parallel chapter to Matthew 24 and to Luke chapter 21. And it's the chapter that deals in the Gospels with the last things, the end times events. And so again, I think we're fairly familiar with a lot of this stuff. So, but let's just touch on a few things. We'll make our way through here real quickly. So as he went into the temple, or out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, teacher, see what manner of stones and buildings are here? Now, this temple, just to comment real quickly, this thing was amazing. It was one of the wonders of the ancient world. Herod was a master builder. He was phenomenal. You can go to Israel today, and you can still see the ruins of many of the things that Herod built. And even today, although they're ruins, you can get a picture of how majestic they were back, you know, when they were originally built. If you go to Masada today and you go up to the top of Masada, it's astounding what this guy had built. And so the temple was like that. It was truly a wonder of the ancient world. Some of the stones today, if you go to Israel, you can go into what they call the Rabbi's Tunnel. And there you have the foundation stones that would have been placed back in that time. And some of these stones, they're so big and they're so heavy, they have no idea how they moved these things. It's pretty astounding. So these guys are looking and they're commenting on this amazing structure. And Lord, look at this thing. And Jesus says, you see these great buildings? Not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. You know, most people believe, scholars believe, and I think it's true, that the destruction of Jerusalem by Titus was not simply a human act, but that the hand of God in judgment, we know it's true. I mean, Jesus is part of the parables here. He's telling them that the judgment's coming. But in order to destroy the temple like they did, they, humanly speaking, they couldn't have done it. And again, if you go to Jerusalem today, you see these massive stones in this valley that were thrown off of the walls back in those days. You think, how could anybody throw a stone this size anywhere? They're unmovable. They're still there in that valley today. And this was, as Jesus declared, to be the judgment of God. Not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign when all these things will be fulfilled?" Now, the thing that we have to understand is in these prophecies right here, and Luke makes it clearer than do Matthew and Mark, there are two destructions of Jerusalem that are being foretold. The one that would happen back in 70 AD, which would have been 40 years after this for them, but then there's also the one that's yet to come. But they're both included in it. So it's like a double prophecy because there was to be a double destruction. So they're asking him, okay, when are these things going to happen? And they were going to happen 40 years down the road, but then they were going to also happen again in the future, and they haven't, and it hasn't happened yet, at the end of time. So Luke is the one who sort of draws the distinction that part of what Jesus is saying is obviously referring to the nearer destruction, because he says they're going to encamp the city, they're going to destroy the city, and they're going to lead away captive into all nations the Jewish people. That's what happened in 70 AD. Mark and Matthew don't so much talk about the immediate. They look more out to the distant prophecy in the future. So the question is, what will be the sign when these things will all be fulfilled? Jesus, answering them, began to say, "Take heed that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and will deceive many." So what are going to be the signs? There's going to be spiritual deception that's going to come. Secondly, "But when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be troubled, for such things must happen, but the end is not yet." And that's, of course, been the history for the past 2,000 years. Wars, rumors of wars. It's been more time of war than time of peace. But then, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. So now Jesus is telling us there's going to be an escalation of these things. There's going to be an intensifying of these things. There's going to be a more frequent experience of these kinds of things. And you know, if you study history, it's very interesting to me. I personally believe that, you know, technically speaking, the end times or the last days are the period of time between the first and the second coming of Christ. Paul talks about the last days. He's talking about that period of time. But the point where you sort of cross over into whatever it might be, the final stretch, the final hour, you know, the last section of this period of time. I really think if you look at things historically, I think that the beginning of the 20th century was really the beginning of the end. You know, if you look at what happened at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, and all of the things that began to develop, the escalation in technology and all of the things after the Industrial Revolution and all of that, all that came from that. And it's just continued to go from there. And what did we have in the 20th century that we had not previously had? We had nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. We had what we know as two world wars. And prior to that, I mean, there had always been wars. There had always been battles, kingdom against kingdom and so forth. But this was on a level that there had been nothing like it prior to that. And that was World War I. And then the Second World War came and dwarfed the First World War as far as the destructiveness of the thing. But, you know, when you look at the advances in technology, when you look at the rise of, you know, skepticism and atheism and these philosophies that would undermine the biblical worldview and start to dominate the culture and all of that, man, the 20th century, the mid-1800s and right on through, I mean, it started earlier in the 1700s, but it really kind of kicked in and became the dominant situation the beginning of the 20th century. There's a great book, if you're ever interested in just reading, you know, from the historical standpoint, called Modern Times by Paul Johnson. Paul Johnson's a great British historian. And it's a fascinating story, man, to read the history. It's basically the history of the 20th century. And so this is what we're seeing. We're seeing as time goes on, we're seeing an escalation of these things. And, you know, here we are today. I mean, do we realize how thin the ice that we're treading on really is? I always think about the Chinese. You know, I mean, if anybody ever could just decide one day, woke up in the morning, we're going to take over the world, I think the Chinese could do it. You know, they got the manpower for sure. And they got the military ability and all that. I mean, it's absolutely astounding that things are still relatively as calm as they are. Because the whole thing could just blow up in a second. And, you know, when you think about what's already happened in history, this always blows my mind, to think of what's already happened. To think that we already went through the Second World War. That we've already seen the total decimation of nations and societies and, you know, genocides and all the crazy stuff we've already seen. You know, anybody that thinks that that's never going to happen again, man, they need to wake up. It's going to happen again, even more intensely than it's happened in the past. And so Jesus says, these are the beginnings of sorrows. Watch out for yourselves, for they will deliver you up to councils. You will be beaten in the synagogues. You will be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all the nations. And that's what's been happening for the past 2,000 years. The gospel has been being preached. And thank God it's still being preached to the nations today. But when they arrest you and deliver you up, do not worry beforehand or premeditate what you will speak. Whatever is given you in that hour, speak that, for it is not you who speak, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, father his child, children will rise up against parents, cause them to be put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. Now, the context of this is Jesus is talking about things that are going to happen with Jerusalem. Now, we do not believe that the church is going to participate in this period of history that we call the Great Tribulation. We believe that God is going to deliver the church before this happens. But there will be believers. There will be multitudes of people that come to faith in Christ during the tribulation period. Innumerable multitude. And, of course, there will be the new work of God amongst the Jews. And it's almost like there will be, and maybe the 144,000 would be the example of it, but there will be a, kind of like what it was in the first century, where there all of these Jews became followers of Jesus as the Messiah, and they went about preaching, that's going to happen again. And they're going to be in a similar position to what the apostles were in the first century when they were opposed by their rulers and brought before the kings and all of that. This is all going to be repeated, particularly with these Jewish believers who will come to faith. And so, not that it's not going to be happening with non-Jews around the world, that is too, but the context here is Jewish. Verse 14, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So you see, he's referring to the prophet Daniel. He's talking about the abomination of desolation. Where is it going to be? It's all going to take place in Jerusalem. And this abomination of desolation that Daniel spoke about has not yet transpired in history. The ancient temple was desecrated and a lot of horrible things happened during the period of Antiochus Epiphanes and the Maccabees and so forth, and even when the Romans destroyed, but this abomination of desolation has not yet, that hasn't happened. This is the, basically, as we put the pieces together from the New Testament and the prophetic scriptures of the Old Testament, the abomination of desolation is essentially when the false Messiah takes his place in the temple of God and claims to be the true God and calls the world to worship him. Paul tells us about it in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Revelation chapter 13 talks about it as well. But those that are in Judea, flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter or take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. Woe to those who are pregnant and nursing in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter. In the winter, or as Matthew tells us, on the Sabbath. So you see the context is very Jewish. For in those days there will be tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake whom he chose, he shortened the days. So this is what is awaiting the world. This is what is going to come down before it's all over. A holocaust so great that unless the Lord shortened the days, there would be no flesh that would survive. So if anyone says to you, look here, there's the Christ, or look there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Now you think of how many people have been deceived today through false religion. People have been deceived through, you know, the various cults and things like that. And as bad as that deception is, and as, you know, I mean, it's, you know, spread kind of far and wide. Can you imagine the deception when the false prophet is performing signs and wonders, doing miracles, giving life to the image of the beast, perhaps even a false resurrection of the Antichrist who's been attempted to be murdered? I mean, you know, you can see the world is just going to go mad in worshiping them. But Jesus is giving the warning to those who are still on the earth at that time. False Christs and false prophets will arise, showing signs and wonders to deceive. But in those days, after the tribulation, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars of heaven will fall, the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and then he will send his angels and gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest part of the earth to the farthest part of heaven. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near at the door. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So Jesus says, this generation is not going to pass until all these things happen. Now somebody think, oh, well, look, Jesus had it wrong. He made a mistake. He said that generation wasn't going to pass away. Jesus thought that all this was going to happen during his own lifetime. No, he didn't. It's not what he said. He says the generation that sees these things will not pass away until all of these things are completed. So he wasn't talking about his generation seeing these things. He's talking about the generation that sees them. So the parable of the fig tree. Some say that, well, this is a reference to the nation of Israel. And so as we see the birth of the nation of Israel, we know that, you know, the coming of the Lord is at hand, and the generation that sees the rebirth of the nation of Israel will not pass away until all these things have been fulfilled. And so we've been trying to figure out what's a generation. We thought it was 40 years. And so 1948, 40 years, 1988. So Jesus should have come back in 88. The rapture takes place at least 7 years before. The church should have been out of here in 1981. I used to think that. Lots of people did. Obviously, we didn't have it right, did we? Somebody says, well, you know, the problem is it wasn't a 40-year generation. It was a 70-year generation. And so then they calculate out, and it's like, okay, now we've got a different date that's set. Or it wasn't the reestablishing of the nation in 1948. No, it was when Jerusalem came back under Jewish control in 1967. That's the starting point. So we go 67 and 40 years, but I think we've already passed that mark as well. So I think the answer is simply this. We don't know exactly. And to try to get too specific is always going to be a mistake. Now, personally, I do not think, although, as we saw earlier, the fig tree that Jesus cursed did obviously represent Jerusalem, I don't necessarily think here that Jesus is, I don't think the parable of the fig tree is necessarily Jesus saying, when you see Israel reborn, then, you know that everything's going to come down. To me, that's more of an interpretation, or it's reading something into the text that isn't necessarily there. What the text is simply saying is, okay, a fig tree, when its branch is become tender and it puts forth leaves, what do you know? You know that summer is getting close, right? So when you see these things happening, all the things that he's been describing, he said, then likewise know that my coming is near. Just like when a fig tree blossoms and you know summer's close, when you see these things happening, you know that I'm close to returning, and know that the generation who sees these things happening will not pass away till everything is fulfilled. It's actually a word of hope for those who are living during the tribulation period. This isn't going to go on forever. This isn't going to go on indefinitely. It's going to happen in your lifetime, the culmination of all of these things. That's what I believe the Lord is really saying here. But of the day and the hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. So at that time, Jesus, in his state of humiliation, taking upon himself the form of a man, limiting his own omniscience, at that time, Jesus, the Son of Man, does not know the day or the hour. I believe that he knows now, but he didn't know then. And this is just an expression, really, of the limitation that he took upon him at the time. So therefore, since no one knows the day or the hour, take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house, gave authority to his servants, to each his work, and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. Watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to all, watch. So that's the message. We see these things happening, and what is the Lord saying? You know, watch, be ready. And that's been the word that God has given to his church all throughout the centuries. Watch and be ready. You don't know the day or the hour. We don't know when the Lord is returning. He could return at any moment for his church. He could return any moment for us personally. We can have our own personal rapture any moment. Nobody knows the day or the hour necessarily. And so the thing is, we're to be watching. We're to be following Christ. We're not to drift away. We're not to take a break. We're not to get caught up in other things and neglect our spiritual lives, or neglect the things that God has appointed for us. We need to be diligent all the way, all the time, right on through to the very last breath or the very moment when the Lord returns. So that's what we want to do.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Mark in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part one of Jesus Died, Rose, and Will Reign. But right now I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Wisdom and Warnings of Jesus. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BBM-133. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson. Also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.